So Psalm 127 on page 624. Unless the Lord builds the house, its builders labour in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchmen stand guard in vain. In vain you rise early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat, for he grants sleep to those he loves. Sons are a heritage from the Lord, children a reward from him. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior are sons born in one's youth. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. They shall not be put to shame when they contend with their enemies in the gate.
Have you ever noticed that when you go along to a training event at work, or to a conference, or you hear a sermon in church, you come away with the burden of, I should spend more time doing X, whatever it is, or I should prioritise Y more highly? For me, in my job, I'm forever being told that such and such a book is a must read for pastors, that so and so's blog is unmissable. I should spend more time on my sermon prep, or I should spend more time meeting up with people. I should run this course or that. I should spend more time with my family. And my time gets more and more pressured, and I feel more and more burdened, and I get hardened, and I start saying no to everything. Do you find the same in your job? I don't know what it is for whatever you do for a living. You need to bill more chargeable hours. You need to find more new work. You need to spend time on personal development. And then outside of work, you need to spend time on your fitness, and you need to spend time with your family. And that's all before church commitments that you really ought to be spending more time on. Well, today's talk, I hope, will be different. Today I've got a very simple message. We need to stop and depend on God. Our age is over busy, isn't it? Apparently, the average night's sleep has dropped from 9 hours a night 100 years ago to an average of 7 hours a night now. And I suspect some of you are getting much less than that. We need to stop our incessant activity and take a good hard look at it. Psalm 127, which Simon just read, is a wonderful meditation on the futility of our desperate busyness if it means we're not depending on God. Before we dive into the psalm, though, I do need to just say one thing. My assumption in today's talk, and actually in this whole series of talks on time, is that you are over busy. If you're actually a bit lazy, and you're doing the bare minimum at work, you're not very busy at home, you're doing little to serve at church, this talk may not be for you. If that's you, feel free to slip away now and spend the rest of lunchtime meditating on Proverbs 10, verse 4. Lazy hands make a man poor, but diligent hands bring wealth. Idleness is not a godly pattern of life. No one's gone away, so I take it that we all struggle with over-busyness, at least some of the time. Psalm 127 reminds us that the Lord, that is God, is the one who grants success. And as we look at the psalm again, I think we can recognise the typical middle-class ambition, can't we? The psalm is written for the person who is working long hours, enduring a long commute maybe, slaving away year after year to secure his home, his house in the home counties, to pay off his mortgage, to bring up the blonde-haired, blue-eyed children whose angelic photos will adorn the mantelpiece. Isn't that right? The two halves of the psalm there talk about the building of the house and the gift of children. At first glance, they look quite disconnected, but actually they were both part of the image of the successful, blessed life in ancient Israel when the psalm was originally written. And they're both part of the image of the successful, blessed life in England today. In fact, the connection between the two halves of the psalm is quite tight. A house can speak of not just bricks and mortar, but of establishing a dynasty. In the Hebrew language, the word for builders is very similar to the word for sons. So the ambition throughout the psalm is one of prosperity, security, and reputation. And they are the ambitions that most of us in our culture today share, aren't they? What does the psalm say about them? Verse 1. unless the Lord builds the house, its builders labour in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchmen stand guard in vain. In vain you rise early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat, for he grants sleep to those he loves. We like to think we can achieve anything by hard work. In fact, that's the ethic for our age, isn't it? We want to train our children to aspire, to work hard, to aim for the stars. And again, hard work isn't a bad thing. But if it isn't done in dependence on God, the Bible tells us it's futile and foolish. Verse 2 speaks of rising early and staying up late. How many of us try to burn the candle at both ends? It talks of toiling for food to eat. The language echoes the curses of the fall when it all went wrong for the world. We were told then that women will experience painful toil in childbearing. Men will toil to produce food. Now, these are the experiences that God has deliberately brought on us to humble us, to show us our inability to achieve our dreams. And yet do we learn the lessons? The home counties are filled with people who are restless and bitter and disillusioned because despite their years of hard work, they haven't achieved their dreams. Is that true of you, maybe? Some people do seem to achieve those dreams. They project an image of happy, successful, high-achieving family. And yet, how many of those people look back and think, was it all worth it? And it can so easily be snatched away. A couple of months ago, we had a family gathering and we rented a huge, beautiful house down on the south coast. The owner had worked long hours as a banker in the city to build his dream home for his family. But just when it was nearing completion, his marriage fell apart and he now rents out his empty house to people on holiday. In vain you rise early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat, for God grants sleep to those he loves. It's very striking that God's promise in both halves of the psalm of sleep and of children are two of the elements of the middle class dream that we have least control over. We can't get to sleep and we can't have children simply by working harder. Sleeplessness and childlessness should be reminders to humble us, to realise the limits of our hard work and to turn to God in dependence. And yet, ironically, people often respond to both things by throwing themselves into even more frantic activity. The ambition for prosperity, security, reputation, they are natural ambitions for us, but they're desires which God will fulfill so much more abundantly and for eternity. And he gives us these things as a free gift, as we're going to see. If you're here today and you're chasing this ambition without God, will you wake up and see the futility of it? The psalm doesn't simply describe, though, the materialistic, worldly, middle-class ambition. It could also describe a very pious Christian kingdom ambition. We can start to see that when we notice that it's the psalm of Solomon. It says that there at the beginning, the king who built the temple. The word house was used to describe both the temple itself and also the dynasty of Solomon and his father David, whose throne God promised to establish forever. In the New Testament, the church is described as the household of God. And likewise, the language of children is used to describe spiritual children, that is, converts. So the psalm could speak about the Christian ambition to build the kingdom. Some years ago now, a scholar came up with four words that he thought defined evangelical Christians. And one of those four words was activism. And some of us will have consciously maybe turned our backs on the middle class ambitions that we've been talking about so far. And will have thrown our energies into Christian kingdom ambition. But it may be that we need to learn the same lesson. unless the Lord builds the house, its builders labour in vain. I've heard it suggested that there's a much higher incidence of burnout and related illnesses among evangelical Christians than in the rest of the population. The American pastor John MacArthur wrote, "Some Christians live as if heaven would be an unwelcome intrusion into their busy schedule." Is that true of you? Christians of all people should be displaying not the chaos of a foolish, driven life, but the peaceful order of those who have entrusted ourselves to the gracious God. If we are over busy, whether we're driven by worldly middle class ambition or by Christian kingdom ambition, well, we need to learn this lesson, don't we? It's Jesus' work. It's Jesus' work. You see, he is the one who reverses the brokenness of this world, the effects of the fall and the painful toil. Jesus says in John's Gospel in chapter 5 that my Father is always at his work to this very day, and I too am working. A bit later in John chapter 14, he says, in my Father's house there are many rooms. I'm going there to prepare a place for you. Even as we meet this lunchtime, Jesus is hard at work preparing a home for us, so much better than any home we could build for ourselves. The New Testament overflows with ways in which the imagery of the psalm is fulfilled in Jesus Christ. He is the bread of life, not the bread of anxious toil. He is the one who gave his life to defeat the enemy, Satan. He was glorified through his death and his rising from the dead. All that we're aiming for, whether in our middle class ambitions or in our Christian kingdom ambitions, they are all given to us freely in and through Jesus Christ in the kingdom to come. And so we need to rely on him alone. Rely on him alone. I think that's going to mean three things in particular. The first is that we need to stop. We need to stop. We need to stop our incessant activity and start to depend on him much more consciously. In the Old Testament part of the Bible, the Israelites were given the Sabbath as 24 hours every week when they were not allowed to work. Imagine that, 24 hours when you're not allowed to work. The Sabbath reminded them that God created the world and then he rested. God is the one who makes us holy. God is the one who rescues his people. God, God, God. Stopping our work reminds us that it's his work that we depend on. William Wilberforce said, "Blessed be God for the day of rest and religious occupation wherein earthly things assume their true size. Ambition is stunted." Now, I'm not convinced that we're under an obligation to take one day a week as a Sabbath, but I do think we need to stop whatever we regard as work regularly in order to remind ourselves of our dependence on God. Just as it would be sensible for someone who's in danger of becoming an alcoholic to have dry days regularly, I think for us when we're in danger of becoming a workaholic, we need to have days of work-free time regularly. It may be that you wouldn't yet call yourself a Christian. In fact, you might recognise yourself clearly in that image of middle-class ambition that I've been painting. Well, please will you recognise your limitations? You cannot accomplish your dreams. Even the little glimpse that God might grant you will not be enough. It won't satisfy and it won't last. So will you take time out? Get off the hamster wheel for a second and consider the claims of Jesus Christ, the claims of the Bible. Ask a Christian friend to meet up with you this week and to explain a little bit more about what we believe and why. Or come and meet with me. And if you are a Christian, are you stopping work regularly The psalm reminds us that even something as basic as the time we get up in the morning and the time we go to bed at night expresses our dependence on God. Tim Chester says in this excellent book I've been plugging through that whole series, there are two copies I think left on the bookstore just over here. He says, to work when we should sleep betrays a lack of trust in God. And we need to stop work in order to do other things. For church on Sunday, I hope. What about blocking these Tuesday lunchtimes out in your diary week by week? It's an act of faith, isn't it, to down tools at 1 o'clock, even while deadlines are pressing in. But like Wilberforce, I hope we'll find that when we get back to our desks, earthly things will have assumed their true size. Christians will want to make time each day to meet with God in the Bible and to pray. And we'll want to make time for our families. I think a marriage will struggle to be healthy without at least one evening a week where work and chores are deliberately pushed aside to spend time together. If we don't stop regularly, it's very possible that God will stop us. The signs of burnout and other health problems are God's way of telling us that we've reached our limit. We're overdrawn on what we're asking of our bodies and our minds and our emotional resources. And that's the time to be humbled and to accept our limitations. One Christian woman wrote movingly about her illness. This illness has helped me realize that there are things I've been finding my worth in apart from God. I thought my value was caught up in what I did or accomplished. But I am learning that I am no less valuable just because if I added up all I now achieve in a whole day, it would only fill an hour of my old normal day. I am just as worthwhile, loved and significant, even if I can't get out of bed and before I've uttered a single prayer. May this truth crush the need I have to achieve things each day to feel good about myself and teach me to surrender to God the things I find my worth in apart from Him. Let's not wait until we're ill before we stop and remind ourselves that our worth and all that's worth accomplishing come as free gifts of God in Jesus Christ. And as we stop, let's make time for prayer in particular. Prayer is an expression of dependence on God. God loves to hear us depending on Him. Because we're finite, time spent praying comes at a cost. It means we can't be giving our best attention to something else while we're praying. But if we depend on God alone for eternal prosperity, security, reputation, well, how strange it would be if we found ourselves too busy to pray. A friend of mine says that whoever he's meeting on a given day, whatever pressures he's under, he wants to know that he's had the most important meeting of the day first. His meeting with God. It might feel like we can't possibly spare the time. There's too much to do. And yet, who builds the house? Who blesses his beloved with sleep? Who gives us children? It's the Lord. Let's meet with him. Now, I could stop there. I've made my point, I think. We need to rely on God alone rather than our incessant busyness. But my experience in trying to do this, not perfectly, but putting some of this into practice over the last few years, has been that there's another blessing. And I think we find it in the Bible as well. It's the blessing that stopping and consciously depending on God in prayer then frees us to work without burden. I find that I'm freer of tension. I don't get emotionally drained as much by the pressures of work and the discouragement that we all sometimes face. The importance of stopping work isn't just a simple matter of how I spend my hours, although it is about that, but it's deeper than that. It's about an attitude. It's not about indulgent me time. The Apostle Paul said that he was pouring himself out like a drink offering. He worked hard. We are to work hard. It will still be tiring. And yet our burdens are lifted as we entrust the results to God. He doesn't depend on us and our efforts. We rely on Him. one of the most helpful things in Tim Chester's book is when he talks about the circle of responsibility and the circle of concern. I think he gets it from someone else, actually, but I read it in that book. The problem is that the point is that we have certain responsibilities in life. And our job is to carry them out in obedience to God as best we can. But around the circle of responsibility is the circle of concern. These are things that are important to us, but are beyond our ability to control. And Chester says, my duty with respect to the circle of concern is to trust God. He goes on to say, problems arise when people confuse the two circles. Some people put things that should be in the circle of responsibility into the circle of concern. In other words, they expect God to do their job for them because they're lazy or shirk responsibility. Other people put things that should be in the circle of concern into the circle of responsibility. They take responsibility for things for which they should trust God. This leads to busyness and worry. You bet it does. Do you see how liberating that is? We are freed from the burden of things that aren't our responsibility. We may have great concern for something. We might want to pray with all our hearts for something. But they aren't our responsibility, maybe simply because we don't have enough time to do them. If God hasn't given me enough time to do something and I'm using my time to the best of my ability, then it's just not my responsibility. And therefore we are relieved, we are freed, aren't we, to concentrate on the things that God does intend us to do and has given us time to do. As the Apostle Paul puts it in 1 Corinthians 15, always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labour in the Lord is not in vain. Unless the Lord builds a house, the builders labour in vain. That's what we've been seeing this lunchtime. But if we are working in dependence on the Lord, entrusting the results to him, and simply discharging our duties as best we can, our labour is not in vain. So I'm going to close this lunchtime and finish our series on time by praying the prayer again from my textbook for the series, the children's board book, God Made Time. And so let's just pray this prayer, shall we? Let's bow our heads. Thank you, God, for time. Thank you for the morning and for the evening. You give us all the time we need to do the things we need to do. Help us, Jesus, to spend time pleasing you.